Today, capital gains, ready, steady, stop. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to the latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian and New Zealand flavour. Today, I'm joined again by property expert Joe Wilkes. So hello Joe, how's New Zealand travelling?
Very well. It's an interesting time over here at the moment. We've got quite a lot of, talk and speculation about whether or not we are going to have a capital gains tax, whether we will, whether we won't. Lots of lobbying happening from both sides of the fence, those that are in favour and support of a capital gains tax and those that aren't. And I suppose you get that political separation now of which side people are sitting on. So bits to discuss today. I thought that we'd do something a little bit different, just go into some data, go into some of the tax changes that are happening or likely to happen in a fairly short-term view. And then also just trying to understand a little bit about this this capital gains tax change, because New Zealand is one of very few countries that don't currently have capital gains tax on residential property investment businesses. So it's a new world that we're looking at, and it's creating a bit of disturbance.
And I also understand that data is disappearing in some areas, so you have to work quite a lot harder to dig data out these days.
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll just start off with a bit of an update on stock levels, because stock levels are things that I think in Australia you've seen stock levels highest level since 2012, I believe. Sales in Sydney down 20% year on year. We're starting to see an increase in stock levels. And just to update, nationally now, realestate.co.nz, 37,372 properties available for sale this morning. And in Auckland, the realestate.co.nz numbers have risen to 13,925. So that's up from just over 11,000 at the beginning of January. So quite a sharp rise in availability. I still have a little bit of an issue with the Trade Me data. I can't get the national picture on available stock. And Trade Me will also incorporate quite a few private sales, because people can list their own properties on Trade Me. Trade Me currently suggests for Auckland, however, that there are 13,491 properties available for sale. That is until you get to page 15, when all of a sudden the number rises to 14,557. So a bit of a discrepancy in the data there. But that's, a starting picture. I'm not sure what's causing this. And this capital gains tax threat comes on top of what has been talked about quite widely, which is the change in the negative gearing allowances or ring fencing of tax losses. For those who don't know what that is, it's where an investor owns a rental property, perhaps, and makes a loss on it, which is claimable against the tax that they might pay on personal income. Now, negative gearing, something that came into New Zealand in the late 80s, we've now got the, from the next tax year, that's going to be phased out. And there's quite a lot of background numbers that I think may well just sort of demonstrate why we're seeing this change in the levels of stock. Done a little bit of homework, unfortunately, I can't get a lot of data now. Things don't seem to be quite as clear as they were a couple of years ago. So some of this data goes back to 2017, but I think it's still relevant. Back in 2017, we had in New Zealand 621,400 properties that were rented out. Approximately 40% of taxpayers at that time with a rental property were claiming a loss by the end of 2017. So that's quite a lot of people who've got investment properties losing money on that proviso that, well, hopefully it'll go up and we'll make a capital gain. Of the numbers, and again, the tax residency status is difficult because further research, I've been able to establish that we've actually got 33,000 empty properties in Auckland alone, which may or may not be held by New Zealand tax residents. So we've got a little bit of a, are they investment properties where the income's being taxed overseas or whatever, and some of them actually, well, 33,000 actually aren't occupied. The capital gains tax that they're proposing will look at introducing a capital gains at point of sale on somebody's marginal tax rate. So if you're a 33% tax rate payer, the year that you sell your property, you'll have a tax paid at that 33% marginal rate. Now, how do they value it with properties that were bought in the 1980s or 1990s is very difficult. But what they're proposing is having a valuation date that needs to be adhered to by 2021. So that's going to change, I guess, a lot of people's perception on buying and holding investment property.
So just to be clear, the capital gains is only on investment property. It's not on your primary residence.
Well, again, none of this has come in yet, but that's okay. What they're suggesting. The other things that have been widely overlooked by the media have been the suggestion that they might actually look at introducing a tax on empty properties, which is something that they've done in Canada. I read in an article on Canada that they're talking around 100,000 or so empty properties in Vancouver alone, and they're looking at introducing this tax to, I suppose, gain some revenue from properties that aren't being used in the marketplace. So that side of the whole tax proposals hasn't been really widely publicised. But anyway, despite that, we've got people up in arms and we've got very much a left and a right view on how this is going to impact the market. The national government are claiming that it's going to reduce the supply of available rentals and push rental prices up. I'm not sure if that's really the case, but they found studies to support the idea that rental values will go up, despite the fact that actually rents, other than Wellington, rents have been falling in Christchurch and in Auckland, which are the two other, I suppose, main marketplaces, or bigger marketplaces. So that's one thing. And we've also got, I guess, the voices that are coming out in the media now. Simon Bridges, National Party leader, he's very much against capital gains tax, calling it a tax on hardworking New Zealanders. It's difficult because he's talking at it from a position of somebody who owns four properties. Difficult to go and look at it and say, well, it's an impartial view. And the finance spokeswoman for the National Party as well, Amy Adams, I heard an interview with her on Radio New Zealand the other day, and she's vehemently against capital gains tax, having reduced her portfolio of properties from 8 down to 6. So it's a bit clouded. The things I think that will be the first focus, because I don't think we're going to get a view or a decision on any capital gains tax until after the next election. So we've got a year and a half next election, and then maybe we'll see that. But in the interim period, it's the negative gearing allowance and removal of that I think is going to play quite an interesting part in the market. Now, I've got some data here from November 2017, which the debt levels within the New Zealand economy have grown quite significantly since then. Back then, total lending, so this is all lending within New Zealand, so households, businesses, stood at $426 billion. That's now approaching $450 billion, so that's data that I do have. At the time, November 2017, there were $172 billion worth of outstanding mortgages on owner-occupied housing, and residential property investment represented $68.475 billion. What's not being published as readily today, however, is the breakdown of what level of those debts are on interest-only terms, which, looking at Australia and the challenges that's causing there now, that for me is the big thing that's going to impact our market. And at the end of November 2017, 42% for all investor lending was on interest-only terms. If you switch that back a bit, and you consider that Stats New Zealand last year suggested $191 million was claimed by residential landlords as losses on their investment properties at an average of $2,000 each. It works out, apparently, according to them, as a $2,000 loss per investor. split the two, you're looking at 95,500 negatively geared landlords out of 621,400 investment properties. It's quite a stretch. I actually think the number's probably higher than that, just when you look at the weight of the lending.
Yeah, it's hard to get real good data on this, and it's the same here, by the way. But we know from the ATO that roughly half of property investors here in Australia who have effectively a loan are actually leveraging through negative gearing. So it's quite a significant proportion of total investors. What's also very interesting is that it tends to be predominated by people with multiple investment properties.
Yeah. Well, here's something that really shocked me. When you look at the total lending within the country, and this is the lending that's also going to businesses. So, you know, in New Zealand, we've got businesses, agriculture, and households. Total lending back at the end of 2017 was $426.831 billion. The equivalent of GDP in interest-only lending was almost at 50%. So we've got a GDP that's approaching $300 billion. Almost half of that is on interest-only terms when you look at the debt that's structured behind that. $133 billion of bank lending on interest-only basis involving no principal repayment obligations other than when the loan terminates. That was the stats that were released at the end of 2017. It's gone up since then. So we're sailing quite close to the wind.
Mm. Yeah, interesting. And in Australia, we had about 700 and something billion of the 1.7 trillion interest only at the peak. And at one stage, more than 45% of all loans in Australia were interest only. It's come down a little bit now because people are actually being forced to essentially switch as their interest only loans come up for renewal, because they no longer actually are passing muster when it comes to the tighter lending standards. And that's creating quite a big stink, because there are some people now who suddenly find that they can no longer afford to get that loan, because effectively the repayments have gone up by 40%. And that's been one of the factors that's led to a significant flow of additional properties onto the market, as investors are suddenly confronted with the need to sell. And interestingly, it was precisely the same that happened in the UK. So if you go back 4 or 5 years, there was the mortgage market review in the UK.
Yep.
And one of the things that they came up with was the concern about interest-only loans with people without any principal repayment plans. And they introduced tighter standards, and almost immediately in the following year, about a third of people with interest-only loans in the UK had difficulty, and in some cases were forced to sell, or indeed see their repayments rise significantly. So this is a very significant and prickly issue. But it's not one I think that New Zealand can leave unaddressed, given the situation they're in. And I think you've said that they're actually doing some things differently now, aren't they?
Yeah, we've got differently in terms of the access to data is one thing. The mortgage lending last year, 30% of it was on interest-only terms still, so that's still quite high.
Yeah.
I mean, my time working in the UK, interest-only lending peaked at 17-18% of all mortgage lending. So these are on unfounded grounds from my perspective, and we saw a property market just fall over when this changed. So it's yeah, it's one that I think the regulators got to be quite sort of mindful of, and you know, you can't just remove it overnight. But they are, if we want to get control of the debt levels within the economy, there needs to be some greater tapering of what banks are allowed to lend to households.
Mm. Yeah, and that I think is exactly where we are in Australia. So we've had tightening here, and of course now we've seen the implications of that tightening in terms of the sinking home price market. And it's interesting that you have already some deterioration in the New Zealand market with probably looser controls than here around Australia at the moment.
Yeah, well, the Reserve Bank, they're implementing capital controls. So they're looking at Core 1 capital ratios being improved, particularly from the main Aussie lenders.
Yep.
Kiwi Bank seemed to be fairly close to satisfying the new terms already, but the Australian banks are well off. I think ANZ's Core 1 capital ratio is around 3.4, 3.5%, so that's quite low. will that suck liquidity out of the market? I think it probably will. Yep.
So it's interesting, Joe. One of the things, of course, here we had were caps and limits on interest-only loans, and those things have actually been used to slow the market. So what about New Zealand? Are there any controls or caps on interest-only lending at the moment?
As far as I'm aware, there's no caps on the interest-only lending. I think that's the one thing that has allowed first-time buyers to actually compete in the market for the last few years. Without that ability to have weekly service repayments much lower than a capital repayment, there's no way that they could have competed on earnings. So no, we don't have that restriction. The restrictions that we have over here are on the amount of lending that the deposit levels that banks are allowed to go and lend against. So there is a restriction on the amount of low deposit lending. Those restrictions are quite easily overcomeable, though, if you've got parents who revalue a home and provide a deposit from a house, or if you've got more than one property and you revalue it up and you take some equity. So while it's considered a block, I don't really see it as big a block as a proper understanding and control over the interest only market. I have a feeling as soon as these tax changes change, with people now seeing the Auckland market falling, North Shore prices are 5-6% down year on year. There are still suburbs that are going up, but tending to be the cheaper suburbs. And this is where I think a lot of the high multiples of debt to household income from first-time buyers, this is where they're crashing into the market and probably taking the stock from the investors who are offloading. But the picture around Auckland last 3 months, we've seen prices fall 2.5% in 3 months. So it's quite a quick turn, and it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. I think that we've got to be careful because the mainstream media are still, I suppose, leading the younger generation to the slaughter of interest only debt and massive multiples of income. As you saw in Sydney, where people were buying in 2016-17, and their deposits have been wiped out.
Absolutely. Well, it's very interesting that we've seen in Australia the same, with first-time buyers coming into the market, getting interest-only loans, and, of course, that reduces the repayments, as you say, and then suddenly finding that that's for a fixed term, and then suddenly the loan is going up. And we're seeing quite a lot of pressure now on first-time buyers who bought 4 or 5 years ago on an interest-only basis, now suddenly finding their repayments are going up. So it's a very important message to anybody who's thinking about buying on an interest-only basis. You do need to have a clear plan as to how to deal with the capital repayments, because at some point that is going to definitely be a critical issue. And simply saying, I'll repay it from the sale of the property, is not actually accepted now in Australia as a legitimate plan.
Yeah, well, we saw this headache in the UK. I think there are 1.6 million interest-only loans still outstanding in the UK. And you've got an awful lot of people who took those loans in the 90s and early 2000s who are now in their mid-50s, late 50s, with massive mortgages that they are running out of time to repay, and many don't have the capital buffer to pay them off at the end of terms.
Yeah, and in fact, in the UK, they've just announced a new scheme where people in that situation who are moving into retirement will be able to continue to borrow on that basis into retirement and beyond, and essentially repay the loan when they actually leave the property to move either into care or on death.
Oh, wooden box.
Exactly right. And they are prepared, that the latest guidelines in the UK is roughly a 40 or 50% LVR. So in other words, you can borrow up to half of the value of your property on an interest-only basis and you'll repay on death. Not a happy situation.
It's not ideal. And then, well, I suppose it's one way of overcoming the inheritance tax allowances in the UK. I'm not sure if it's an ideal situation, but yeah, it does overcome inheritance tax.
Well, the interesting clause in those new loans is they cannot actually be called until the person either moves into care, long-term care, or effectively dies. So it really is a very interesting talk about debt from cradle to grave. Well, we're absolutely seeing it there.
Yeah, well, I think across the UK, and it's going to happen here, I think we'll see an increase in those reverse equity mortgages where people have paid the mortgage off at 60 and then start tapping into the house as they go through the 60s and 70s. Yeah. Interesting times ahead.
Yeah, debt, the sea of debt continues to rise, and I'm afraid that more households are going to get caught out and some will drown in the process. Okay, so I think the message from today then is, amid the fog of no data, the downward forces on the property market are going to continue.
It very much looks like it.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate your time today.
Okay. Cheers, Martin.